The reading today is described as the incarnation of the Word of Life, 1 John 1, first four verses. We declare to you what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our own hands. Concerning the Word of Life, this life was revealed, and we have seen it and testify to it, and declare to you the eternal life that was with the Father and was revealed to us. We declare to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. We are writing these things so that our joy may be complete.
We have a worship service set aside just for our young ones. So if you are age 3 to 3rd grade, if you'll come over here to the right-hand side with your teachers, we've got a service set aside just for you. I'm gonna sing, sing, sing. I'm gonna shout, shout, shout. I'm gonna sing, I'm gonna shout. Praise the Lord when heaven's gates are open wide. I'm gonna sit by Jesus' side. I'm gonna sing, I'm gonna shout. Praise the Lord.
Good morning. It's good to be speaking to you today and be with you this morning. It's some of you know that I've been in book world for the last few months, and so I'm grateful for an opportunity to emerge from my hole and speak with you about 1 John. As Steve mentioned, we're going to be spending several weeks in this short letter of 1 John, and so I'm excited to get that series started this morning. You probably know also that this week another series started. The baseball season started up again. And, of course, that means that autograph seekers are going to be out in force. And especially this year, everybody wants the Astros autograph, of course. If you've been living in a hole for the last year, you may not have realized that the Astros won the World Championship in 2017. And the trophy has been traveling around town, and our minister was able to stand next to the trophy at Rice last week. My favorite part of this picture is that this is a Rangers fan right here, but you can see that I guess now everybody wants an Astros autograph. You know, even if the Astros hadn't won the series, I'm sure, you know, last year you could see scenes like this. Everybody loves to get an autograph, right? It's pretty cool to come close to somebody famous, somebody who's achieved something great, somebody that you see only at a distance or on TV, and to be up close to that person and hand them something and have them address you and write their name. It's pretty cool, right? It's not just about baseball. Of course, the basketball season is also coming to an end, and you'll see at the start of every basketball game lots of autographs being signed. I actually don't have too many autographs in my collection, but one of them is actually of a basketball player. You may remember a great Spurs point guard named Avery Johnson, number 6. And one day, my mom and I were going to a game, we decided to stay after and go down to the part of the stadium where the players come out, and we waited around. And somewhere I have a cup signed by Sean Elliott. And then Avery Johnson came out and was headed to his car and talked with us from the window of the driver's seat. It was pretty cool. I actually have a I've got this nice little Avery Johnson jersey. Pretty nice. It's actually, it does have relevance to our lesson, because you see here, number 6, he's got a signature. Keyshawn, can you tell me what's underneath there? That's right, John 14:6. So he put a Bible verse on there. We're actually going to end up in John 14 later this morning. So that's one of my prized possessions, getting to meet Avery Johnson. And I'm also a big jazz fan, some of you know. And so another great memory of mine was going to a concert in Baltimore and getting to sit just a few rows back from the stage when the great pianist Herbie Hancock was performing. And I didn't realize when I went to the concert that there was actually going to be a signing opportunity after the concert. And when I heard that they were going to be out in the lobby, I ran back to my car through the snow. I think it was, you know, a blizzard conditions. And I made it to the parking garage and just dug around in my car for anything I could find that he could sign. And all I could come up with was a jazz compilation CD that was there, but I grabbed it and I ran back to the concert hall and waited in line and came up and he asked my name, and this was pretty cool. He said, "Caleb, that's a biblical name, isn't it?" He said, "That's a pretty cool name." And I figure if a guy named Herbie tells you your name is pretty cool, then your name is pretty cool. But he signed that CD for me, and I have that on display in my office. So it's really cool to get an autograph, to see somebody up close like that, to have them say your name. I'm kind of curious, does anyone here, I'm sure some of you have some stories like that. Have you ever... Okay. Does anybody have a story of somebody famous you've seen?
Yes, good morning. My first NBA All-Star game I went to in the Toyota Center, I was fortunate and blessed enough to meet my basketball legend, Julius Erving. As I walked in the door, he shook my hand, and when he shook my hand, it kept going around my hand. It felt like an octopus wrapping up.
Thank you for sharing that, Lincoln. Dick?
Many, many years ago, when I was about 9, which means it's about 60 years ago, the Houston Fat Stock Show and Rodeo was held in the convention center downtown, not where it is today. One of the guest stars was a fellow named Chill Wills, and I'm pretty sure there's only 3 or 4 of us who know who Chill Wills is. He's a great character actor, Western character actor. And he was there, and he was walking right up the steps next to where we were sitting, and I asked him for his autograph. Actually, I didn't ask him for it. I just kind of looked at him and...
Maybe one from the other side of the room. Did we have anybody over here who wanted to... Okay. I'm sorry. I've got a home front issue. I've got to honor the...
when I was 8 or 9 and the All-Star game was in Dallas, I was also flying to Dallas to see my cousin. I was by myself. And we had been up in the air a little while. I put my seat back, and then the flight attendant came up and said, can you put your seat forward because the man behind you needs a little more room? And I turned around, and it was Hakeem Olajuwon. And he signed my plane ticket.
All right. Okay, one more. All right, I'm going to get another one. Here.
I used to work at a spa on near the Galleria area, and I actually had the privilege of working on DeAndre Hopkins and his mother, who has a very interesting story. And they call him Nook for short, which is in UK, because he had a binky in his mouth, a pacifier, all the time. And so that was his mother's kind of term of endearment for him for his whole life until this day.
That's so cool. OK. Okay. Thank you all for sharing. I'm sure we could keep going around. You know, that's probably partly because, you know, when you get to meet a hero or your legend, the joy of that is kind of palpable. You know, it's something you remember, and it's something that you want to share. I can't remember a time when we've called for volunteers from the audience to speak where so many hands went up. You know, when that happens, you want to tell somebody about it happening, don't you? I think we all understand that. And, you know, if we can understand that, we can understand that you want to share the joy of getting an autograph or meeting someone famous, then it shouldn't really be hard to understand where John is coming from in our text this morning, 1 John verse 1, because John is somebody who has seen somebody. And John is someone who wants to tell others what he has seen. Not something that he's just seen at a distance, but, you know, like Lincoln said, somebody who's shook his hand, somebody he has touched, somebody he has heard, somebody he has seen with his own eyes. He says, "We declare to you what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands," that close. And so when that happens, John says, we want to declare it to you. We want to declare who we've seen, because that's the only way to make our joy complete. You don't get an autograph to keep it to yourself. Your joy isn't complete. And that experience, I don't think, is finished until you've declared it to someone else and shared with someone else what you've seen. And so John, in our text this morning, one of the most important things to remember as we go throughout this series is that John is an eyewitness of Jesus. John knew Jesus. John was up close and personal with Jesus. And now he wants to share that so his joy will be full. But who was John? I mean, that's a question that I think we want answered a little bit, because we're going to be spending some time in this letter that he wrote. What do we know about him other than the fact that he knew Jesus and had touched and held and heard and seen Jesus? Well, one of the things we can conclude from that is he must have been an elderly man by the time he was writing this letter. 1 John, most scholars agree, was probably written around the very end of the first century, maybe in the last decade or so of the first century. And if Jesus, if we think back to when Jesus' life ended in the mid-30s, then that means that we're talking about someone who is writing a letter 60, 70 years after Jesus has died. Now, that's not inconceivable that somebody, of course, would still be living in the 90s who knew Jesus. Somebody of an advanced age, somebody who was in their 80s or 90s, and had met Jesus as a young man, as a 20-something in Galilee. And so John is an elderly man by the time he's writing this, and I think we can be fairly confident of that. And most scholars are also pretty confident that this John who's writing the letter of 1 John is the same John who wrote the Gospel of John. That the Gospel of John and 1 John have a lot of similarities, have a lot of echoes between them that make it highly plausible to think that we're dealing with the same author. Think about the way that 1 John 1 begins. It talks about how we declare to you what was from the beginning. And John chapter 1, verse 1 begins the same way. In the beginning, the Word was with God. The fact that Jesus is referred to as the Word of life in 1 John, or the Word who was with God in John 1. Another similarity. And in John chapter 1, the author of the Gospel is also at pains to let the audience know that he's writing about someone who dwelt among us, as he says in John 1:14, and we have seen his glory. In the same way that in 1 John chapter 1, the author of the letter says, we're declaring to you what we've seen So those are only some of the echoes just in the first chapter of 1 John 1 and John chapter 1, and there are others we'll see later, but I think that it makes it highly likely to think that we're talking about the same John in 1 John 1 who wrote the Gospel of John, the fourth gospel. But which John was that? That's a thorny question. That's a harder question to answer. And scholars still write about this and talk about this. Part of the problem is John is one of the commonest male names in the first century. One scholar has estimated that 5% of all Palestinian Jewish men were called John, which makes that the fifth commonest name in that period. So there were lots of Johns running around in Palestine. It would kind of be easier if it was the Gospel of Herbie or First Caleb. That would be a little bit more distinctive, maybe. And it would be easier to kind of narrow down which person we're talking about. But when we're talking about a John, there was lots of Johns. And so scholars have talked about, well, which John was this who wrote the book of John, who wrote these letters, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. And some scholars have said it was likely John, the son of Zebedee, one of the 12, one of the apostles who knew Jesus. Others have said that, well, it's some other John who's not very well known, who's anonymous. When we read the Gospel of John, very frequently there's a character who appears in the Gospel who's not named, but who is referred to as the disciple whom Jesus loved. If you've read John, that phrase probably rings a bell. And in the book of John, we hear about how the disciple whom Jesus loved was very close to him and was leaning on Jesus even at the Last Supper, somebody who knew him very intimately, who was a close friend of his. And so some scholars have thought, well, maybe the book of John was written by this disciple whom Jesus loved, whose name may have been John or may have been some other figure. So there's scholarship about this, but some of you who may remember a class that we did, I think last year, where we were looking at this book by biblical studies scholar Richard Bauckham called Jesus and the Eyewitnesses, the Gospels as Eyewitness Testimony, which is a great book. And I don't have time to go into everything that's in this book, but I will share with you that Bauckham believes that the John who wrote the Gospel of John was not John the son of Zebedee or some other John, but a very specific John who was known to first century Christians by the name John the Elder. John the Elder. And in fact, if you read 2nd and 3rd John, sometimes you'll see that the author refers to himself as the Elder. And Bauckham looks at a lot of historical sources outside the Bible to try to corroborate this theory, and he builds a case that I think is pretty convincing, that this John the Elder, who lived to an advanced old age and was, many of the sources talk about how old he was, and who lived in the city of Ephesus in Asia, that this John the Elder was one of the longest lived disciples of Jesus. He had known Jesus and the apostles, and now by the end of the first century, he had outlived all of them and was one of the few remaining eyewitnesses of Jesus' life. That's Bauckham's theory. And Bauckham, in fact, goes further and says that this John the Elder was likely the disciple whom Jesus loved in the Gospel of John. And John the Elder wrote the Gospel of John and these Johannine letters. That's Bauckham's theory. And, you know, you can consult the book if you're interested in knowing more. But one of the things that I think is amazing about this is, if that's true, one thing it calls our attention to is there were lots of disciples of Jesus in the first century. And sometimes we focus so heavily on the apostles, the 12, that we forget that there were lots of early Christians, lots of people who had seen Jesus. Not all of them are as famous to us. Not all of them would be the ones that you'd go up to get an autograph from. You might want to go get an autograph from Peter or James or John, the son of Zebedee. But when we read the New Testament, we read the names of countless disciples of Jesus who are less well known to us. Women like Joanna or Salome men like Nathaniel or Rufus or Alexander. Probably none of those names ring a bell, but their names are in the New Testament. People who were disciples of Jesus in this early generation. And when we go outside the Bible and we look at some other sources about the history of early Christianity, the list just continues. Men like Aristion, ever heard of his name? Somebody who was talked about by a writer named Papias, who also talked about John the Elder. And that shouldn't be surprising to us, that there were lots of people whose names we might not even know, who were eyewitnesses of Jesus. Paul, in 1 Corinthians 15, talks about how after Jesus was raised, he appeared to all of these named individuals. But Paul, it said that he even appeared to more than 500 brothers and sisters at one time, most of whom are still alive, Paul said, though some have died. 500 of these eyewitnesses of the resurrection. And that tells me you didn't have to be an apostle to be an eyewitness of the resurrection. You didn't have to be one of the MVPs, the people that are celebrity figures who might have warranted an autograph, to be an eyewitness of the resurrection. John the Elder was an eyewitness of the resurrection. And that transformed him. That became something that he wanted to share, that he wanted to declare, that he wanted to tell others. And so that's why we're going to be spending some time in 1 John. What does this eyewitness of Jesus, this man who knew Jesus well, maybe was even the one who leaned against Jesus at the Last Supper, what did he want to share with the people that he was writing to in 1 John? That's the question for us over the next couple of weeks. What's the message that he wants to share? What does he want to tell us? Well, I'm going to suggest that there's two big themes that we're going to be returning to again and again in this series. And there are other things going on in 1 John, but I think two of the biggest themes, two of the biggest messages that John wants to get across are, first of all, don't sin. Don't sin. But do love. Those are John's do and don't for the letter of 1 John. He's going to impress on the people he's writing to again and again, if you are a follower of Jesus, if you are a disciple of his, if you want to know what an eyewitness of Jesus wants to leave with you, don't sin. But do love. Love each other deeply. Now, why are those the two lessons that John wants to leave us with? Well, if we think about what Bauckham is suggesting, if the author of John really is this elderly man, John the Elder, who is one of the longest lived eyewitnesses of Jesus, one of the last to stay alive, that means that he's the last contact with the generation of people who knew Jesus personally. And he's aware that he's nearing the end of his life. And so he's talking to Christians who are going to go on practicing the faith, but who may not have that direct connection anymore, the same way that we don't, who may not have known Jesus during his earthly life. And it would be natural for people in that situation to start to wonder over time, is God still here? Is God still abiding with us? Do we still abide with Jesus? If I haven't seen Jesus myself, how can I be sure that he really is here with me? And that's one reason why John writes this letter. As we're going to see, he addresses that question in the letter. How do you know that you abide in him? And how do you know that he abides in you? That's an important question for John as he's leaving behind and as this eyewitness generation is dying off. And his answer is, here's how you know. Here's how you know that you're still in touch with Jesus. Here's how you know you still abide in him. It's no longer just because you've seen him or heard him directly or handled him with your hands the way that we as eyewitnesses have, but he's telling them you can be sure. You can be sure that he abides in you as much as with an eyewitness if you remember these two things. If you don't sin and you do love, you can be sure. You can reassure yourself, John's going to tell them, that God abides in you and you abide in him. Now, it's not as though John is just making those two points up. It's kind of interesting going back to the verse that Avery Johnson signed on my jersey from John chapter 14. If we go back to the Gospel of John, we find that in the Gospel of John, that first generation of disciples faced the same question as Jesus was nearing the end of his life. They knew that Jesus was saying, I'm going away to prepare a place for you. I'm not going to be here anymore. And the disciples were worried about this and were asking Jesus, well, how will we know that you're still with us? They had all the same questions that John's readers did back in the Gospel of John. And if you look at John 14 and 15, you find a long speech that Jesus gives to the disciples. And that if you're following along with Bauckham's argument, John the elder would have heard, would have been there at the Last Supper, hearing Jesus talk about how they would know that he abides in them. And listen to what Jesus says. He says in beginning in verse 15 of John 14, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. In other words, don't sin. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you forever. He goes on to say, I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you. And Judas at one point asks, not Iscariot. There's another disciple we don't talk about a lot, the Judas who was not Iscariot, but who was an eyewitness of Jesus, asked him in verse 22, Lord, how is it that you will reveal yourself to us? How will we know? And listen to Jesus' answer in verse 23. Those who love me will keep my word. Anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. In other words, don't sin. Obey my teaching. And if you go on into chapter 15, we find the other big theme from 1 John. In verse 7 of chapter 15, Jesus says, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. Well, how do we abide in your love, Jesus? And he answers, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love. There's the don't sin message again. And then he goes on to say, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Does that ring a bell, by the way? That's a phrase that Barbara read for us earlier today from 1 John 1. Our joy may be complete. It's another echo between 1 John and John that makes us confident that we're talking about the same John who wrote both of these books. But Jesus goes on to say, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. And there's the second big theme from 1 John 1. Love each other as I have loved you. What's the point of all this? Well, if we go back to John, we find in the gospel that Jesus, as he was preparing to leave, to die, to go to the cross, to be raised, to ascend to his Father, he prepared his disciples, the eyewitnesses, those who had heard him, those who had seen him, he prepared them for his going away. And he encouraged them with words like these. I abide in you if you keep my commandments and if you love each other. And so it's not surprising that 60, 70 years later, as one of those disciples, potentially John the Elder, was writing a letter to his readers in 1 John 1, he remembered what Jesus had said, and he wanted to leave those two messages with his disciples as well, and with all of us, to be encouraged to know that Jesus abides with us as much as with the eyewitnesses, if we will remember these two things. Don't sin. Obey my commandments. Obey my teachings. And love each other. Those are the two themes that we're going to be spending some time with over the next few weeks in 1 John.